Welcome back to Space Castle. It is your clubhouse and ours for all things nerdy. My name is DT.
My name is Alex.
I'm Seth.
If you're listening to this on a Wednesday when this episode drops, you are 2 days removed from Father's Day. There's lots of fathers in pop culture. We're a pop culture podcast. We're going to talk about fathers in pop culture.
Yeah. Father figures in fiction. Alliteration.
Yeah.
This topic is something that, like, my perspective on it obviously has changed since becoming a father, but there's so much discourse online about this that there are some pretty obvious picks and there are some sort of like deep cuts. But when I was thinking about this, I thought it was pretty interesting that a lot of the candidates that I had for my picks for kind of like ideal father figures, that's kind of what we're going for, right? Is like stand-up versions of good father figures.
I am not going for that specifically, but if that's what you chose, then that's...
Well, yeah, kind of. I was in my head, I was thinking like good examples of like who a good father figure would be, or just like who we think of when we think good father figure. In that sort of mental process, I was thinking about how crazy it is that many father figures in fiction are not biological fathers. They're sometimes grandfathers or brothers or uncles or foster fathers.
Yeah, that was hard for me to narrow into my picks because like all of the ones that I immediately thought of weren't like fathers. They were just father figures in the...
That's okay. I mean, like Uncle Iroh, like that's total fair game. Which is probably one of Alex's picks, and I don't really think about it.
You're right. That was my first idea, the first one that I had. And I guess since I'm already rambling, I'll continue to ramble some more. That was the first one that came to mind. I wrote down in my notes app after we were talking about this, Uncle Iroh is the first one. And then I put my phone down, and I literally couldn't think of anybody else because I was too busy thinking about how good a father figure Uncle Iroh was.
Yep.
Yeah, he fucking rules.
Iroh's the best. That was one of my first picks, like first thoughts as well.
Well, and contrary to what I was just saying, like you typically have that sort of pseudo father figure because usually it's because the father isn't in the picture anymore because they've either abandoned or they're dead. And in this case, it's just because he's a dick.
Yeah.
Zuko's dad is alive and it's two brothers. One of them is a better father figure to the other's actual biological son. He's just a better person and he's learned from his wicked ways instead of embraced them. Iroh to me is the ideal father figure because not just for Zuko, he's like a father figure to many other characters in the show.
He's patient, eager to teach. Like he's got a lot of the aspects that like I would want as a father.
Well, that's it. It's like wisdom, right? If I get to a nice old age, I would consider myself a successful father if I am wise and can give my children wisdom. That's a very difficult task. It's like, how do you become more wise? You don't. You have to live life. You have to kind of like understand things. You have to go through trials and tribulations. And if you don't come out on top, you still have to learn from them. And that's what I love about Iroh's character, right? Is that he failed miserably. He continues to, but he sacrifices what he knows. He sacrifices his station. He sacrifices a lot, his comfortability and well-being for the sake of Zuko throughout the show.
I find it really interesting that you bring up the wisdom part because that's one of the main things that I took away from Iroh, from the show's running, is what it means to be wise and how to get there. And for me, the way I understood it, from Iroh's teachings, is that you have to live an examined life. You need to not just live your life, which everybody does, but you have to reflect on that life. You have to think about your choices. You have to think about what happened, what that means. You have to live an examined life, and that leads to wisdom. If you just live your life, then you're just living your life. Like that's how we get, frankly, a lot of our politicians. They don't think about it.
You're right. And it's counsel for the sake of giving advice and not being disciplinarian or demanding obedience.
Right.
Like think about all the interactions that Iroh has throughout the show that could be constituted as him giving advice. Like Book One, he's talking to Zhao and saying, this is probably a bad idea because the waterbenders are going to kick our ass. He talks to Toph and gives her advice. He, you know, Tales of Ba Sing Se is like an entire episode about him as a father figure and ends in the most terrible dramatic way.
I know. It just makes me sad to think about every time.
I can't even hear that like tune without getting sad.
Just to derail real fast, I saw a TikTok a little while ago that was like, there's a guy on a piano and he's like, oh, you think you're tough, huh? Yeah? You think you're so tough? And he just plays the first three notes.
Yep.
And I was like, oh no.
What a dick.
I know. It just like cuts to black three notes in, but it's like, that's all it takes, man. Three notes and I'm already like choking up. It's so sad.
It's that one, and then the other one that sticks out to me in the show is right near the end. I think finale part one, where he's talking to Zuko and he has his like prodigal son moment, where he comes into the tent. But ultimately, like, Iroh's just a badass, and he sticks up for his personal values, and he doesn't force them on anybody else. But he does give advice, and then he lets people make their mistakes, which is ideal. I think like that's what a good father should do.
You do still have to let people live.
Yeah, you have to say, this is what I believe right action to be. And then you call them out on their mistakes, like when Zuko's screwing around trying to still capture the Avatar and Ba Sing Se. And then at the end, forgive them for their mistakes and then just move on. Iroh is ideal. That was the first one to me. And I was like, I think it was a no-brainer. And you guys, I'm not surprised at all that DT knew what I was going to pick.
Now that we have peaked right off the bat, it's all downhill from here. Iroh is the best, obviously.
Well, we can coast now, so.
Well, hold on. You guys don't know what my picks are. My picks might be fucking amazing and incredibly insightful. It's not.
You cannot pick a better father figure than Iroh, in my opinion.
Not only is he a great father figure, I just think he's one of the best written characters in modern fiction.
Absolutely.
DT, let's hear your first one.
Darth Vader.
Darth Vader.
Is this an unironic one? I can't tell these days.
I mean, come on. Like, the dude, like, he learns he has a kid, and the first thing he does is want to, like, start up a family business and, like...
Look.
He's like, hey, like, I have a kid. Like, I'm going to go find him, and, like, we're going to join forces and, like, bring him into the family business and like, stop the war. It's going to be dope. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty sweet. How many men, when they find out they have a kid, would immediately seek out that kid and like adopt him and like want to be a dad? Most of them would probably just fucking run away. So Darth Vader, you're fucking cool. Seth is not convinced.
I do want to point out, he was very much opposed to letting his kid have any decision of their own. He did ultimately, but that was just because the kid was powerful enough that he couldn't force him.
Isn't that every trip through parenthood, though, is like trying to like guide your child and them rebelling against you? Sometimes they literally join a rebellion.
It's just parenting on a grand scale.
Honestly, though, not the Star Wars dad I would have chosen.
Well, certainly not fucking Uncle Owen. Fuck that guy. You can't go to college. You have to stay here and work on the farm. Drink your fucking blue milk and go to your bedroom.
Your blue milk, yeah.
But no, it's we're going to delve into Star Wars, because why the fuck not? We did it last episode and it was very successful. A lot of people listened to it.
Star Wars is life.
There is, while we're on the subject, an interesting thought that if Obi-Wan and Yoda hadn't been complete fucking assholes and tried to get Luke Skywalker to assassinate his dad without even knowing who he was, there is a point in time where Luke Skywalker might have actually joined forces with Darth Vader and stopped the war and killed Palpatine and made shit better. I know we've got Dark Empire, where Luke actually turns to the dark side and everything's shit and terrible. But if Obi-Wan and Yoda weren't so fucking short-sighted, what if they were like, Darth Vader's your dad. We need you to join forces with him temporarily just so you can kill Palpatine. And then once he's free of Palpatine's grasp, we can turn him back to the good side and shit'll be dope. But instead of like, kill that dude in the helmet. And Luke's like, okay, wait, what?
You're saying this sword-wielding warrior should infiltrate the dark side? You're describing a plot line that is sort of runs through Red Rising. Anyway.
Is it time for Alex's 30-second book corner already? It's only been a year since we established that.
Well, it's been a couple episodes since I mentioned Red Rising, so I had to just drop it in there.
It had been a while, yeah.
But closing thought, Darth Vader also sacrifices himself to save his kid, and he writes himself at the end, makes amends for everything. He didn't get a chance to do that with Leia, who he fucking tortured and then blew up her planet right in front of her. But not everybody's perfect.
It's like the most problematic one. DG's just wanting to stir up controversy. He's saying Darth Vader so that on Twitter he could be like, fight me.
Vader's final thoughts were of Leia. So there's something to be said there. Something to be said there for the Kenobi show, but we won't delve that back up too. Okay, we're moving on. I got a good one. Mine will come as no surprise to anybody who knows me either, because I can't pick Iroh, is the one and only, the famous Mr. Greg Universe.
That's an excellent choice.
What an absolute gem, huh, of a parent.
Ah, I see what you you guys at home can't see it, but I'm pointing at the camera right at Seth. I see what you did there.
I'm a professional. Yeah, Greg Universe is, I think, an absolutely spectacular father and a good father figure. Like, he has a lot of the same traits that Iroh does. He's patient with his kid. He tries to teach them whenever possible instead of just directing them. Like, he really is like, I'm helping to guide a literal human being. I'm not, you know, creating a clone of my ideals, which I think is important. Plus, he's just funny and fun and he's nice. He's just, yeah, he's a great dad.
Yeah, what I love most about Greg Universe is the fact that he's not a perfect dad. He was thrust into this extraordinary situation and he doesn't have all the answers, but he's like, hey, kid, we'll figure it out together. We'll find the answers. That's fucking like parenthood right there, I think. No parent who becomes a parent, and I don't know this from experience, but I know from, you know, anecdotes from my parents and other parents I've known, no parent who becomes a parent knows how to be a parent. They learn as they go. And I think that's awesome. And I think Greg Universe perfectly encapsulates that entire idea, amongst many other ideas that the show just fucking brilliantly handles.
Yeah.
There's no playbook. Yeah. That's the thing that's often said when you first become a parent or when you're leading up to it. They're just like, there's no playbook. Do you have any fatherly advice? Well, and then everybody's got their two cents and then ultimately they fall back on, well, you're going to figure it out.
Try not to kill him, I guess.
Feed him and water him. And,
and that's what's funny is like even, you know, doctors who would presumably have a lot of good parenting advice, they always just fall back on the biology because biologically you're going to do just fine. Just like make sure they don't die. Like that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't want to get into the, you know, a random advice that your relatives will give you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Greg Universe, great fucking pig.
This episode is really a highlight of two things. One, Star Wars is complicated, and that's wonderful. Two, there's a handful of children's cartoon TV shows that are frankly some of the best things that have ever been created. And people need to give them time. Like, I know people that are like, I don't really want to watch Avatar or Steven Universe. Seems kind of like a kid's show and I'm not really into cartoons. It's like, no, but like, give these ones a try. Like, you have to. They're important.
People bounce off young adult books for the same reason. And it's like, oh, this is intended for a younger audience. It must not have a like relevant theme for me, which is complete and utter nonsense.
Well, people used to do the same thing with video games for decades too. And look where we're at now.
Yeah.
Like, just like what you fucking like and you can find well-meaning and insightful messages everywhere. Yeah. Stop being a dick.
Good art is good art. Like, why try to pigeonhole yourself?
Yeah.
I think we're getting better at that. We talked about it in our early on in our hipster episode about like how it's cool to just do your thing now instead of worrying about it.
It's a good callback to episode 3.
Hipster Centaur Babies.
Are we back to me again?
We're back to you again if you want to be.
Yeah, dude. Hit us with pick number 2.
So have you guys ever seen the movie Easy A?
Yeah.
With Emma Stone?
Mm-hmm.
The father figure in that, played by Stanley Tucci.
Stanley Tucci fucking rules.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's a great fucking movie, too.
That was the other one that popped into my head for some reason.
Because it's an excellent fucking choice, Alex. Hey, no, pause the podcast. Hold on. Alex, you fucking nailed it. That's a really good goddamn choice. And I want to acknowledge it right now. That's excellent. Really good pull.
Yep.
Thanks. He is quick-witted. He loves his daughter clearly with no reservations. He has an excellent rapport with his whole family, but with his wife. Patricia Clarkson, and they constantly just say, this is life and you're dealing with it. And that sucks. But like, here's some advice if you want to take it. And I love the way that their family dynamic is portrayed in that movie because it's so unexpected. You go in thinking that it's going to be this sort of teen drama thing. And then there's this family kernel and it's so well represented. And Stanley Tucci is just amazing.
It's true.
So I think he absolutely nailed that character. I think there are a lot of fun things about that movie too. So
I personally think that Stanley Tucci was easily the highlight of that movie.
He's one of the best parts. Like that's why it sticks out to me. I can't tell you some major plot points in that movie, but I remember like watching those scenes and being like, that was really witty and insightful.
Side note, has anybody seen Stanley Tucci's cooking videos on the internet?
They're
fucking delightful.
I'm hanging up this call right now.
We'll see you in about an hour.
Yeah. Podcast over. I'm moving on. I've got other shit to do.
He's just a fucking charming man. Like, he's just got stories and skills and he's just, yeah. I don't know if he's a dad, but his kids are just fucking badasses too.
I bet Stanley Tucci would be the kind of dad that is like Linus Caldwell's dad from Oceans. trilogy, who's like
Bobby Caldwell,
really excellent. Bobby Caldwell, yeah, who's really, really fucking dope, but like doesn't want his kids like treading on his name. So he's like, you got to go off and do your own thing, like, go do your own shit, which is why we don't know who they are, because they're off doing their own shit.
Yeah, Bobby Caldwell's kid, right? Yeah, get in the goddamn house.
Whoa, one of the best lines in that movie.
Had to bring it up, sorry.
Well, he doesn't even show up in the first movie, he's just like this figure.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, DT, you're up. What you got?
My second pick is Neddard Stark from Game of Thrones.
Ooh. Ned Stark. That's a pretty good one, actually.
Complicated character, but yeah.
Did you call him Neddard?
That's his name.
No, it's Eddard.
Podcast over. I failed everybody. Fuck it. Now I'm ashamed.
If it makes you feel better, I didn't hear that first N when you said it, so I thought it was fine.
We have to now call him Neddard Stark, so it's, yeah.
Neddard. First of all, it's fucking Sean Bean. Excellent fucking actor. He brings his gravitas and his wisdom and his kindness to a character that has grown up and has lived in very harsh circumstances. Absolutely loves his kids, teaches them the difference between right and wrong, instills in them a sense of honor that carries them throughout the entire series. Even Arya, who becomes a weird little fucking crazy assassin person obsessed with death, she's still got a strict code of honor that she follows. But yeah, I mean, he is torn between two worlds. He wants to, you know, stay in his home and raise his kids right and do the right thing, but is also called to duty by the king, has to go to the capital, gets entwined in this horrible fucking literal Game of Thrones. And yeah, great fucking character. Even like adopts his, spoiler alert, his nephew as one of his own and raises him as best he can to save his life, because if anybody were to know Jon Snow's actual identity, he'd be hunted down and slaughtered because of all the people who want to oppose his actual rightful claim to the throne. His wife is kind of a bitch about it because she thinks that he was the son of a whore and Neddard cheated on her, but he keeps that secret and he absorbs all that anger and that resentment just to keep Jon alive and to give him the best possible life. He's a great character. He's an absolute father figure to his men too. Like throughout the show, we know that his men love him and look to him for guidance and for care, and they are absolutely just loyal to a complete fault for him because they know he's a good man that takes care of his people. Excellent father figure to everybody.
Easily, you could kind of pigeonhole a character like that as like, oh, he represents this thematic pillar or whatever. But I think George Martin did a good job giving him a lot more depth than that. Because when I think about Neddard, it's like, you kind of touched on it with duty and honor, but it's like responsibility.
The responsibility is a big one for parenting, yeah.
Yeah, he has inherent responsibility, but he leads by action. So you get, as a reader, to understand how he lives his life responsibly and how he, you know, does his duty for the kingdom, does his duty for the North. But then he's also teaching, like, it's like right in the beginning, actually, I think of the first scene. It's like, if you're the one doling out the punishment, you should be doing the execution yourself.
Yeah, you have to be the one to swing the sword.
Right. And Sean Bean does a great job, and he dies appropriately at the end.
Yeah. He dies doing the right thing too, because even though he knew that Cersei was fucking terrible and was fucking her brother and the kids were bastards that had no claim to the throne and they were the result of incest, he was still like, Cersei, like, the kids are innocent. Take the fucking kids and run. And I won't say anything until you're gone. And then Cersei, being the horrible person she is, she's like, no, fuck you. Like, you're dead. He's just a fucking honorable character. Like, his honor is without cease. It's great.
That's a pretty good pick. I'm dwelling on it. It's a complicated one. I like that a lot.
Well, it's interesting to see, too, because he isn't around after, you know, book one.
But he still resonates throughout the whole rest of the series, which is, that's what parents do. They stick with you forever. So, yeah.
That's what I was about to say, is that it carries on. And that's the driving through line throughout the books and the show, primarily the show, is that, like, these characters, his children, are the ones that even his ward kind of carry the show and have all of the sort of machinations happen around them.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Like he raised Theon Greyjoy not as a hostage, but as one of his own kids. Like he didn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Theon Greyjoy could have been treated like a hostage or like a second class citizen, but he was given like privileges and rights, and like he was able to go out to the brothel and like bang hot redheads whenever he wanted to. So yeah, I mean, even Theon Greyjoy, he saw a sense of duty and responsibility to take this kid who was raised by a complete fucking dick, like the king of the Iron Islands was a fucking asshole. And yeah, he raised this kid the way he thought was a better way to raise him. And circumstances caused Theon Greyjoy to fall by the wayside and become a complete dick himself. But that was no fault of Ned's. Ned tried to take a bad situation and make a good person out of it. And for a while he succeeded.
Well, and I think you see in the show at the end that Theon comes back around and like they all have their kind of full arcs, turning into either crazy assassins or kind of coming back to realize like what good things they had before.
Yeah.
And a lot of that had to do with Nedd, you know, a lot of that had to do with what he had said.
I'm never going to live that down, man.
No, that's canon now. I think that's actually, that point is one of those that is a through line of the whole series, but is often kind of overlooked, and how it resonates in with real life is like when everybody's living with Nedd, his kids are kind of rebelling. People are a little bit like, I want something better, whatever, right? They've got typical teenage angst. But as the years go by, after Ned's death, you as an audience and them as characters begin to realize that like, no, actually he was good. He did a lot of good things. And the life that we had because of his like influence and stuff was actually pretty good. And I feel like that mirrors real life, like commonly, obviously not always, but commonly you've got this teenage rebellious phase where you don't like your parents and blah, blah, blah. And then like in your 20s and late 20s, you realize like actually living with my parents and like they were doing good shit. Like that was some pretty good years, like just doing your own thing. And you didn't have to worry about food on the table. You didn't have to worry about like stuff. You just kind of tried to enjoy the life that you were given. Obviously, that is not the case for everybody. But I feel like that is a through line of the show in particular, but also the book series, where like the characters slowly realize like, no, Nedd was like kind of right. He was doing the right thing for the right reasons. And we all kind of exploded out into the world during and after his death. And are slowly coming back to realize that like, that was actually the way that we want to try to do things too.
Yeah. And I think with Nedd in particular, like he doesn't dip into what you often see where this like toxic fatherhood that crops up a lot, where it's like, I'll make my children hard and therefore they can survive this, which would be so easy for George Martin to do is be like,
yeah,
on the surface level, that's what he's doing. But in the individual scenes that he has with like Arya and whatever, he's addressing their individual needs as opposed to being like, okay, well, you know that my motto is winter is coming and that's our motto in the North. So be hard and then you'll survive and you'll be better. That is what it is on the surface level, but that's not what his character is about. It's more about, I'm gonna give you what you need in order to be successful. I just appreciate that as opposed to the easy route, which we see so often in like sports and military movies and things like that. It's like, I had this very hard ass father figure and I was hot iron and I was struck into the steel blade and now I'm better for it and my edge is sharp. And it's like, that's just shitty and toxic and bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I prefer the depiction that you get out of proper father figures.
I can't recall if this was like actually literally said in the books or if this is just a thing that I'm taking away from them. I haven't read them in years. Nedd knew that Winterfell makes hard people, so he needed to be the warmth of a hearth fire.
God damn. Yeah.
Winterfell is hard, so like he needed to not be.
That was very wise.
I feel like we all really needed to talk about Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I think you're right.
There's a lot of good in Game of Thrones, man. The show fumbled it.
Yeah, absolutely. Seth, you got one more pick if you still want it.
I do, and this one is not Ned Stark. Like this is going to be a lot simpler of a conviction here, and that is Mr. Bob Belcher.
Linda.
Yeah, what a good dad he is. For a lot of the same reasons of like Greg and Iroh, even like he's pretty patient with his kids. He lets his kids like do themselves, but still like tries to guide them and help them make good decisions. But more importantly, he like talks about why, and he's not like, this is the life that I want my children to have. He's more like, they're living their own lives. I'm going to try and educate them on how to make good decisions with those lives, which is great.
Yeah.
It's what I want to see in a father figure. And his like rapport with his wife is excellent. He's got like a proper, like I would say healthy family dynamic. Like it's a good depiction of like a nuclear family in general.
It's a very realistic one too, because you can tell Bob is just fucking exhausted all the time, like dealing with three precocious kids and all the absolute fucking ridiculous zany shit that happens to him on a regular basis. And he's exhausted, but he's still just like muscling through. He's like, he's got to be a good dad and make sure these kids have good business sense and can take care of themselves. He's still madly in love with Linda, his wife, and he's still good to his friends. And like, yeah, he's working himself to the bone in that burger shop every fucking day, but he's doing it because he loves his family, which is awesome. So not every dad is like the Neddard Stark fucking swinging a sword, like heroic fucking badass. It's badass to just do the fucking right thing and take care of your family and just be a good person too.
Be reliable. Be a pillar.
I notice a lot of fiction in general, but a lot of people see the sword swinging badassery, but they don't realize like how badass it is to like get up and do the work every day.
Yep.
Like that is fucking hard to do. And like, I'm not even a dad, but I see it. It is equally badass to like to stay up with your screaming child all night and then still make breakfast in the morning for the rest of your family and shit. Like that's like, that's brutally hard.
Dads are fucking heroes, man. Alex, you're a goddamn fucking hero. My dad's a hero. Seth, your dad's a hero. Alex, your dad's a hero. I mean, my dad worked his fucking ass off my entire life to make enough money to support a family of four. And he still had the time and energy to play video games and go to movies and go to the park and play football and like teach me all the things I needed to know and do to be a man and take care of myself. Like, Dad, I fucking love you. I hope you're listening to this. I'm a little offended if you're not because popular podcast. Come on, Dad.
My dad doesn't even know what a podcast is.
I don't know if my dad listens to this, but if he is, Dad, I love you. I appreciate you. My dad was my coach for like every sport I ever played, pretty much. He was an athlete, and that was something that he knew that he could contribute to in a different way, in a still meaningful, but like in a different way. And at the end of the day, just like being that pillar, being the staple, and just showing up is the important thing. You see it used to come back to fiction for a second. You see it used as a way to like derail protagonist characters all the time. So like the biggest example I can think of is Harry Potter.
Yeah.
So it's if you think about the series as a whole, Harry's source of conflict is often generated by his lack of a father figure and him trying to find one. So if you look at all the male characters in the series or anybody that really functions as a father figure, they all end up either dying, going away, not really being the right fit, being sort of corrupted. Sirius really just wants his friend back. Like Lupin couldn't really be there. He's got other shit to do. Hagrid wasn't really a father figure, but he was a protector. Dumbledore was a shit version. Like everybody kind of ended up not being that, but he's constantly in search of it. And Rowling just used that to kind of like navigate this thing.
Yeah. We're insightful motherfuckers, guys.
Well,
try to be.
I'm trying to follow Iroh's influence, man. I want to live an examined life. This one actually comes from Hank. Thanks, buddy. Hank, probably 12 years ago, said a thing that has stuck with me forever. And I think it's like been a proper guiding of my life. And that is to pay attention to what you pay attention to. Mm-hmm. I think that's what leads to being like a good person. I think that's what helps lead to like being a good dad. I think that's what leads to wisdom and all kinds of stuff. Like living an examined life is like, I think, brutally important. And that's one thing that I've noticed a lot of our father choices have in common is like, they don't seem to, you know, just go off the rails or like do something stupid. They care about being a good father.
Yeah, maybe not Darth Vader, but yeah.
There's a lot to be said. Okay, we'll get into that. We'll get into that at some point because I have, I think, quite a lot to say about that idea.
Well, I kind of think of Seth as like a father to Goldblum. And I think so far he's done a pretty good job of raising him.
I'm glad somebody thinks so because I don't.
I mean, we've had some rough patches. We've had, you know, all those times where he interrupted us needlessly. We had those two or three times where he tried to murder Alex. But Seth, I think you're doing a really good job of raising Goldblum to be a good, proper ship AI. I think you're doing a great job. Happy Father's Day, man.
Thanks, friend.
I think I called him Robot Bastard too many times.
He's not a bastard. He has a dad. And now it's time for Messages from Earth. We'll be right back with Alex's Deep Space and a listener question.
We're going to take it back a little bit. Back to 1992.
Oh, yeah, that song. It was like almost on my list, but it just didn't make it.
All right, you're bringing in wrestling references now.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to bring in a little bit of everything. I heard that song so many times at a strip club.
Who hasn't heard it at a strip club?
I'm sure it's being played at some strip club right now.
I know it's a Christmas song.
Yeah, you went weird on this, Brian. I'm sorry.
Bro, this is left field, man.
I don't care. It is such a great song.
What's up, everyone? This is Gomez.
And I'm Brian.
And we're the dynamic duo and co-host of Playlist Wars,
a podcast where we, along with a special guest, pick a musical artist, band, or topic, and each create a 10-song playlist that we feel best represents them.
Then we turn it over to you to vote for which one of us got it right.
You can find us at PlaylistWarsPodcast.com.
Or wherever fine podcasts are found.
And as always, those were some fantastic messages from Earth. And now, as always, it is Segzy time. And because it's Father's Day, I'm not going to make a terrible, awful, gross Segzy time joke because Alex is a father. Alex, you have the deep space. Proceed. That's it. Seth is not convinced and I'm not going to say something fucking gross. I'm not. I swear to God.
I'm waiting for it, dude. I have like concerned face on.
I'm not. I could have thrown in some really gross, like, Seg Me Daddy joke or...
There it is. There it is. I knew it was there.
We went the whole episode without Daddy being thrown in.
I knew it was there. Frankly, I feel relieved.
It wouldn't feel right if I didn't.
All right. So my deep space, yes, I've been out in the inky blackness looking at some cool, cool stuff. And one of the things that I've actually used quite a bit and I've used repeatedly and I think will be a resource for all the writer listeners out there, people who are into developing fiction of any kind or nonfiction, really. There is a blog on the internet created by a literary agent named Jana Reed, and it's called Query Shark. So generally, if you're unfamiliar with the process of getting your book published in the literary world, what happens traditionally if you're not self-publishing is you write your book, you acquire an agent by sending out query letters. So you essentially send an email to a list of agents and say, this is what my book is about. But it's incredibly difficult to do properly because agents see these constantly, all day, every day, and it's really difficult for them to weed through them. So what they have to do, because they see hundreds and hundreds per week, literally, they'll often have to do is just immediately eliminate some right off the bat based on the first couple sentences of this email.
Like resumes.
Kind of like a resume. It's kind of like writing a cover letter for your book. So essentially, once you've written a proper cover letter, it sounds intriguing. An agent will then request your manuscript. If they like it, they'll take you on as a client, and then they sell your book to an editor, at which point it'll become published after the editing process. So traditional publishing is like this long, arduous process, but a lot of people get hung up on the query section because it's really difficult to take this thing that you've been working on and you've been buried in for many times years and then distill it down to a couple of paragraphs. So there's some formula to it. And there's a regular cadence that agents expect to see. You can go kind of off the books and create something interesting. But anyway, to circle back to my actual pick, Query Shark is this blog created by Jana Reed where she had people submit queries to her before they were actually going to submit to agents. And then she breaks down line by line queries and says why she likes them, why she doesn't like them, including iterations that they do. So like, here's some updates that I made to this query.
Hmm.
So she's been doing this for years. There's like a catalog of queries that you can go through and find fantasy, science fiction, nonfiction, kids and middle grade books, like any kind of story that you're writing. And it's a fantastic resource for anybody that's a writer that's created a manuscript and is kind of working on trying to get that published. Looking at recently, there's about 340 queries that she's gone through, and it's just excellent because I'll go through and read ones that are just not in a genre that I would ever want to write, just for the fact of how do they put this together. But yeah, she'll go line by line, and it's simple. It's like, here's what they wrote, here's what my comments are in a different color. You can ingest like 50 of them in one setting. Excellent resource for writers. There are a bunch of others that I'll probably end up getting into it some other deep space, but I think that one was the primary one that I wanted to share. It's a great resource. Janet Reed is the agent's name. It's queryshark.blogspot.com. It's literally just like an online blog and people can write in. You could submit your own query. It's a chance that she'll get to it and put it on the blog. But yeah.
She has an archive going back to 2003.
Yeah, it's years. And I mean, you can kind of get that 340 inside. What is that, 18 years? It's not like they crop up every week or something or every day. She's putting them up every so often, but it's still really excellent. Like, this is a working agent in the literary field, so she actually has work to do, but does this on the side to kind of help writers and new writers.
I love it.
For sure. Now that I'm done, let's do a fun thing again and answer a listener question.
Let's do it.
I'm actually pretty excited for our listener question this week.
So we got one in from Lisa. She sent it in via the Gmail address, spacecastlepodcast@gmail.com. Before I read this question, Seth, do you want to tell our amazing listeners how they can send in questions of their own?
Yeah, man. Hit us on Twitter and Instagram at spacecastlepod. You can also send it to the email address that DT just said, spacecastlepodcast@gmail.com. We have a hotline. We have a Discord. You can basically just find us all over the place. If you go to spacecastlepod.com, we have all the stuff there.
He mentioned a hotline, but the number is 970-591-3577.
You can call or text us anytime, day or night. It is an answering machine type thing, so you can't wake us up, dicks. But yeah, give us a shout anytime. We love receiving those. We played a bunch of them on the show before. If you want to just call in and just talk or ask us a question, do it, because we love it and we'll put you on the show.
It's absolutely blasty.
Yeah. One of my favorite episodes we've done is that anniversary episode where we kind of like popped in all of these random questions on the voicemail. They're always fun to receive. So send us a voicemail.
So Lisa asks, and I quote verbatim, thank you, Lisa, what basic computer function would you most like to have as a superpower?
I love this question.
Anybody want to go first?
You do.
This is a thing that I have thought about a lot because I have a particular problem, and that is terrible random recall memory. Can you guess what my pick would be?
Control F.
Nope. Expandable memory.
Ah.
I need more, better, faster memory. Thank you. That's it, man. I need expandable memory so that I can just like do things faster, remember shit, store more things in my brains.
Control F actually is my pick.
Nice. Yes, I see. That's a good one.
That's a pretty good one.
God damn it. Where are my fucking car keys? Control F that shit in my brain and in the world and just locate that shit.
I want Google. Google is my superpower.
I thought it was a basic inherent computer function. Like, you maybe if you don't have the internet, you have a word processor, maybe you have a terminal, you can do a running specific.
Bro, if I could run bash commands on my brain, holy fuck, you guys would never see me again. I'd live on the moon or some shit.
You'd ascend to a higher plane.
Yeah, it'd be all over
Dr. Manhattan. I like that. I like both are good answers. The one that I thought about was copy paste. If I could duplicate pretty much anything, like, oh, I have a dollar. Now I've got $2. I'm hungry and I'm about to have the last Hawaiian roll. Oh no. There you go. I could end world hunger. I could stabilize the economy. I could do a lot of good.
If I've learned anything about magically printing money, it would destabilize the economy. But that's fine.
Well, if I was controlling it.
Fair.
And I was being virtuous. I'd probably be corrupted by the superpower, but.
Oh, dude, we would all be instantly.
I'd be rich off my ass rich doing stupid shit.
It would take exactly 8 minutes for me to become, I have a space program as a hobby, rich.
It would be me fighting for the longest time not to copy paste like myself.
That would be a no good situation. We've already talked about the downfalls of clones, and I don't want to get into it, DT.
Why not, Seth? This has been a relatively tame episode so far. Let's get weird.
It's a fetish I am not trying to yuck, but it's one I don't want to participate in.
I'm going to Command-Shift-Q close this conversation. I think my honorable mention, it would be escape. Get out. I want out of this situation. If I could build that out into teleportation of some sort, then I want that, whatever that computer function is. I want teleportation, which is essentially copy paste, but that would be cutting and pasting.
Yeah, there it is.
There's my honorable mention, is cutting and pasting. Copy paste for first pick, second pick, cut paste.
My honorable mention is a very simple control Z. Give me an undo, please.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I'm surprised that wasn't one of our like main ones. That's really good.
Well, because like, life is about dealing with the shit, right? So, like, if you could just undo any decision.
Like Skyrim. Yeah, I'm going to kill this entire village. Nope. I'm going to go back and reload that save and not kill that whole village.
Let me quick save real fast. Dude, a quick save, like, Having save points would be absolutely choice, actually. I take mine back. I don't want expand on my memory. I want save points. I want to be able to save.
That is a super awesome, interesting idea for a story too, because you could just be absolutely reckless and try so many different iterations of your life. And if you started it in the most mundane place, that would be, oh, I want to write this book now. That's so cool.
That's a little bit, it's a little bit like what Everything Everywhere All at Once is about, I think.
Kind of. It's hinted at Scott Pilgrim too, but yeah, it'd be weird if there was like a save point at like the behind the Circle K.
Something strange is always afoot at the Circle K. So.
Alex and I recently decided to co-write a story, and I think we just found our premise.
Hell yeah.
Dude, Matrix downloading of skills? Let's go. Just install a new package.
Yeah. Just, I need the newest patch, yeah.
Oh, shit. That would be so good.
I know After Effects.
God, dude, that would be so sick.
You think those effects you're rendering? Huh. I got one ha out of Seth. Ha.
That's about all it deserved, to be honest.
Do you want to control Z real quick and be a little nicer to Alex about that joke? It was a good joke.
It was fun.
It was half-hearted.
Life is not about control Z. It was fine. It was fine. It wasn't a bad joke, but it wasn't that good either.
Alex, do you want to control Z and tell a better joke real quick?
Yeah, no. I have to learn from my mistakes.
I've learned from Iroh, dude. Life's about consequences. You tell a mediocre joke, you get a mediocre laugh. Get wrecked.
I have to stay in my lane. I can't make After Effects jokes. I should have left it to DT.
You should leave most things to me. I'm fucking awesome.
Well,
hey.
I don't know if most things is where I would go.
Hey. What I need in real life. Oh, I don't need it in real life. I've got a mute button right here on my computer.
You do edit this podcast, so it's...
That's my superpower, is making myself look incredibly smart and making my friends look not quite as smart.
not quite as smart. With great power comes great responsibility.
And 1,300 followers on Twitter.
How do you think Caps Lock would manifest as a superpower?
Like this!
British politics. Fucking parliament, where they're just screaming and yelling at each other and jumping over aisles to get at each other. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought about like Banshee from X-Men or something, but yeah, I think we nailed it.
I basically have a top five, I think. It's the best I could do.
I'm going to be thinking about this for a while, though. This question has been in the back of my mind since it came through. Thank you, Lisa, again. But oh my goodness.
When I started developing, I started thinking about this question because I'm sure somebody asked it or whatever. I avoid thinking about it the same way I avoid thinking about what I'd do if I won the lottery. It's like, it's just going to make me sad that I can't do any of that stuff.
Happy Father's Day.
No, but it's good pay dirt. It's good pay dirt for storytelling. My creative well has been filled.
I'm for real, dude. I think that we should write a story about a spot behind a Circle K.
All right. If we can get it going soon, look out, listeners, because we'll put it up online.
Can we turn it into audio drama and show Skylar what real audio drama sound like? I'm kidding. Omega Star 7 is fantastic. It's really good. Skylar's your father. Happy Father's Day to Skylar.
Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day.
That was one of those things where like you said it and like not even people who don't know Omega Star 7 believed you.
We should do an audio drama though. That would be fun.
I'm down.
We've had our practice on Omega Star 7. So
I love voice acting. I'm endlessly intrigued by voice acting.
Alex, we can bang out a short story. And I just had a flash in my head of both of our schedules, and I was like, in a decade, maybe?
I mean, I'll sacrifice sleep to get this done.
That was going to be one of my honorable mentions of choice because of my particular afflictions, but being able to just hit like menu, sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolute choice.
Like force functions. Force quit this job. Yeah.
All right. Oh, damn. Force quit. That's when you're kicking trash cans and punching people when you're heading out the door.
Yeah. I've always wanted to force quit a job. Like, that sounds so much fun.
Keyboard smack.
Dude, for real.
Steal the printer and drag it out into the park and smash the shit out of it and stomp on it.
Beat the shit out of it with your friends. I just want to do hood rat shit with my friends.
I just want to write short stories and podcasts with my friends. So I'm going to do that.
We're doing it, dude. I expect beginnings of characterizations on...
Do not ask for reports on my desk by Monday because you're not getting that shit. You want to come in and see that real quick? Because not happening. If you've stuck with us this far and you want to contribute, drop a character name in Twitter or in the Gmail and we will include it as a Tuckerization, or your own name if you would like, and we will include it in the short story.
Let's do it.
So one of us is going to end up playing XX69 fuckboy XX69. Perfect. That's going to do it for this episode of Space Castle. As always, it's your clubhouse and ours for all things nerdy. I want to thank our good friend Brian Levitt for being a co-daddy and our theme song, D's Notes.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I hate that.
The other daddy is DT. Well, that's your rapper name, is Daddy DT and B-Fuck Supreme and D's Notes.
Daddy DT and B-Fuck Supreme. I hate it.
I do, too.
That's why it's perfect. Yeah.
Become part of our Galactonaut crew on patreon.com/spacecastlepod and support the show. You get access to all kinds of cool shit like pregame videos that go up before every podcast episode. That's it from me. Happy Father's Day. I love you, Dad. My name is D. Fuck Daddy. I don't know.
I have been Red Wine Alex, part-time librarian, Winnebago thief, Master and Space Commander, Inverse Batman, Molotov Donkey.
I think we made a change last week. I believe you're Red Wine and Snatch Alex now.
Ah, you're right. Red Wine and Snatch Alex.
Okay, Control-Z.
Red Wine and Snatch Alex brings a smile to my face every time I remember it. And I'm just Seth. That sounded really sad. I'm sorry. Bye, I love you. D Daddy? Dude, why did you go with D Daddy? Like, what? Want to Control-Z that shit real fast?
Yes, let's do that. Yeah.